The following podcast of SB Nation Radio is brought to you by BetDSI.com. With the NFL and college football seasons here, it's time to take that pigskin knowledge to the bank at BetDSI.com. With 20 years in the business, an impeccable reputation for great service, fast payouts, and an excellent mobile interface where you can play, win, and get paid, it's a no-brainer. BetDSI.com is the place to go. They have every wager option you could ever want or even imagine. And if you're watching a game, you can use BetDSI's live betting option to bet on the fly. Whether it's the NFL, college football, Major League Baseball, the NBA, the UFC, esports, global sports, or even politics, celebrities. I mean, really, it doesn't matter. Whatever you feel like betting on, BetDSI has it for you. You get started today with BetDSI, you can get some extra bang for your buck, too. They're offering double your money for your first deposit. That's right, deposit to start winning and get up to $2,500 free. That's double your money right from the get-go. So what are you waiting for? Double your bankroll right now by joining BetDSI.com and use promo code NATION101. The games are more fun when you get paid, so play at BetDSI.com. That's BetDSI.com and use promo code NATION101.
This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Well, if I'm Major League Baseball, I've got good news and I've got bad news. And the good news is short-term, and the bad news is long-term. The bad news is something I'm going to have to deal with down the line. But the good news is, I had a game last night in Houston that was as tense and as exciting and as energetic and as controversial and as conversational as you're going to get. A Red Sox 8-6 victory. That had fantastic defensive plays, had questionable base running decisions, had strategic elements that could be gone, that could talk back and forth, and of course, it had the big controversy as to whether or not Jose Altuve hit a home run or was it real fan interference that Joe West called at that moment. So if you're Major League Baseball and you're in the PR department, this is a game that you can lay out there and say, yeah, you know what? People were treated to a really good, tense baseball game. I've said this. I said this yesterday. I've been saying this for years and years. The most critical game in a seven-game series is Game 4, right? Because the series is either going to end, it's either going to be 2-2, or it's either going to be a commanding 3-1. And right now, the Red Sox have that commanding 3-1. You can feel a sort of deflation with the Astros now. They're going to win 3 in a row against this unbelievable Red Sox team. That is going to be really hard to do. We'll get to the controversy in a little bit, but the bad news for baseball is this, and this is something I don't know how they're going to fix. I don't know what they can do, but this game was 4.5 hours long, and it was a 9-inning baseball game. 4.5 hours. You cannot sell this to a younger generation. I don't care what you put in it. I don't care what that 4.5 hours has. You can't sell this to the new generation of kids. And that's a problem. They don't want this. They'll want it locally when the local team's in. But if you want a generation to grow up loving baseball, that can enjoy a baseball game like that without a dog in the fight, without any sort of rooting interest, just to enjoy it, you've lost them. You can't do this for 4.5 hours. Baseball's got an issue with that. SB Nation AM.
This is SB Nation AM.
on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Well, despite the 4.5-hour game last night, it was awesome. I mean, it was really fun. It was really tense. And I don't have a dog in the fight either. I mean, look, Red Sox and Astros, I'm looking at this from a standpoint of a series that are two really good teams. 4.5 hours is a very, very long time. It's a really long time. For a 9-inning game, look, if it went 13, 14 innings, I'd be like, I get it. But a 9-inning game, that is way too long. But it had so many moments in this game. The Astros are in trouble, obviously, because now they're going to win 3 in a row against a team that, you know, pretty much dominated the regular season and is just loaded from top to bottom. But I look at this game, and I go back to the controversial call of Jose Altuve, and I'm one that says, has always said, look, that's not a matter of taking runs on and off a board and saying, okay, but if that had been ruled a home run, you don't know how the game is going to play out. But I do think that that had an impact in this game. I do think that that had an impact that led to Boston getting revitalized. I think Astros were a little, you know, deflated a bit, trying to get back into this game. You can't play from behind constantly, and that's where the Astros have been in this series. But that aside, here's the deal with this, with that controversial play. Joe West was not in a good position to make that call. And umpires, we want them, if you're going to make a call, make it confidently. He made it confidently. But this is too close of a call to make, that baseball needed better angles. Because if you're going to set up a rule that says, if you go into the stands, it's fair game, right? So the rule is, if a fan reaches out and touches the ball, like, you know, Jeffrey Mayer did with the Yankees in 1996. Okay, you reach out, that can be called an automatic out, right? If there's fan interference. But it also, that's at the discretion of the umpire. But if you go into the stands, whether it's for a foul ball or whether it's for, you know, anything, if you go into the stands, it's fair game. If the fans don't reach over the yellow line, it's fair game. You're taking your own risk in doing that. I thought he had gone into the stands with his glove. That's what it looked like to me, right? That's what I could see. That's what I looked at. I thought that occurred. Now, I understand Joe West, who's 100 feet from the play and has a different angle, and he doesn't have replay. He doesn't get the benefit of Ron Darling's commentary. He has to look at it with the naked eye. So to him, he's doing two things when he sees it. One, he's assuming Mookie Betts is going to make this catch. That in his eyesight, Mookie Betts is in a position to make this catch. Two, he doesn't get to see exactly where Betts is in leaping up against the wall and going for the ball. I can forgive that, but I can't forgive Major League Baseball for not being able to find ways and different camera angles to change it. I thought Darling did a great job last night explaining exactly what took place. There's a call. It's just like in football. There's a call. You need evidence to overturn the call. It's not, well, we'll now determine what this is. The umpire doesn't know. We're going to use replay to determine what the call is. All replay is doing is saying, is there evidence to overturn it? Great, then we're overturning it. If there isn't, then the call stands. So the call was interference. It stood because they didn't have enough evidence to overturn it. Now, if I'm an Astros fan, I'm livid. That's not right. In 2018, we shouldn't not be able to tell whether he went over the line or not. And I think Mookie Betts knows he went over that yellow line. All right? I think deep down he knows he did.
Of course he does. Didn't you see the look on his face?
Yeah,
when it was determined that it was an out? He was like, okay. His eyes just got really bright and was like, oh, yes.
Yeah. If anything, this is the other thing. If anything, I think it's a ground rule double. It's not an out.
It's not an out.
It's not an out. Like, that, to call it an out, that was stupid. Like, why would you call it an out? An out to me is if a fan not only reaches over, but has like a friend pull him over the line to knock a ball out of a player's glove.
What was that little kid, Jeffrey Mayer?
Jeffrey Mayer, who I brought up earlier. He reached over.
Yeah, that was fan interference.
Yeah, Baltimore series in 96. It was a Derek Jeter home run. That was fan interference because he had reached completely over the line and took the ball away from, was it Alomar? No, who was it that was?
Alou?
Alou. Well, somebody,
no, Alou was Cubs.
That was Steve Bartman. anyway, it was a Baltimore. It was an old Baltimore Oriole. He ended up really, you know, livid. But that I can understand. That doesn't look like fan interference for an out to me. That looks too close, if anything. And I'm talking, you know, nonsense from a standpoint of I don't know how, you know, Major League Baseball would determine that or not determine that. But that doesn't look like an intentional fan interference to disrupt the play. I like the fact that if you go into the stands, you're on your own because fans shouldn't be obligated to move or to be cooperative when you're in their territory.
Well,
too much. That is too much because when you go into the stands, right? If you say to fans, if a ball player comes into the stands, you have to do everything you can to get out of the way. That's asking too much of thousands of people and thousands of potential people that are going to sit there. You could be talking to an 8-year-old kid. You could be talking to a 98-year-old woman. You can't say to fans, get out of the way and not disrupt a player going into the stands to make a play on the game. Because it's just too many variables there. So it's better to tell the players, hey, if you want to make a play in the stands, you're at your own risk. If they hit you, they hit you. If they bump you, they bump you. If they knock your arm, they knock your arm. Because you're going into foul territory to make the play. And when you're on the field in foul territory, that's fine. When you're in the stands, that's fine. But know this, you're going amongst some obstacles. That makes better sense to me. So that seemed a better than, oh no, this was deliberate by the Astros fans to make this a home run. That had the trajectory of a home run. That looked like a home run.
Yeah.
That wasn't like a fly ball to semi, you know, to deep right field that, no, that looked like it was going to clear the fence the moment he hit it. So,
yeah, and you could clearly tell, too, that the fans weren't reaching over. For me, what it looked like, too, is if you're going to make this rule or you're going to have this, then are fans not supposed to protect themselves? Keep your hands down, let the ball hit you.
Well, here's the, that's fine, but here's the problem. If we had Joe West on the show, Joe West would say, Ron, I'm not saying that the fans in the stands, I believe they
can do a better
over,
Joe West impression. Come on.
Right. He would say, he would have said, I believe the fans reached over. So I'm not arguing for a change.
I get human
status.
Error.
He would say, listen, what I saw, fans reached over the yellow line. And there's photographs photographs are, again, because they're two dimensional. They're not 3D. There are photographs that look like that happened, but there's no, the video doesn't support that.
Well, here's my other question too. I mean, it was reviewed, correct?
Yes.
Trying to remember now. It seemed like so long ago.
Yes, but it doesn't seem to be a good. They didn't have very good angles,
right? But what they could have also seen too was that. I mean, when you slow it down, and I don't know if they have the ability to watch it in slow motion replay. I'm assuming they do because the technology is there, but I don't know if that's allowed for them, if they have to see it in real time always. But you can also see that Mookie Betts' glove was closed before the ball even came down.
Yeah.
So you look at that, it's like he wasn't going to make the catch regardless.
Yeah, and the argument, the supporting argument was a fan closed it. I doubt that happened.
No, you can clearly see a fan's glove. I mean, a fan's not going to have the presence, the wherewithal to say, you know what, the glove's coming over. Let me close it real quick.
Yeah. So this is, as I said earlier, this is kind of breaks. This is one of those exceptions to my, look, you can't, you know what I said earlier, like if you miss a field goal, you just can't add 3 points at the end of a game because the whole game is dictated based on score and stuff. This is a little different. I think this would have changed had it been Jose Altuve home run. I think this changes the game. I think
it definitely changes momentum.
Yeah, it changes momentum. It changes a lot of things. I think this would have led to an Astros victory. I can't guarantee it. I don't know how the Boston Bats would have responded in certain situations trailing in the game at the time. But nevertheless, I think this one was a factor.
Yeah. But now, I do need to say this, though, because I got to give credit to the great baseball savant that is Kate Upton.
Oh, yeah, Kate Upton. She was fantastic on Twitter last night. She ended up having to defend herself.
Yeah, but I think she's right on with this, that if a player is in the stands, like Mookie Betts was into the stands, then why is MLB allowing fans to sit there?
Yeah, it's a good point. That's a good point.
Yeah, if all of a sudden you say, you know, bring the wall in or push the fans back, make that an MLB mandate, then you won't have these issues. Like in some ballparks, the fans aren't right there. Like if you go to Dodger Stadium, the fans aren't right sitting up against the wall.
No, that's true. If you design a ballpark, why don't you put a gap between where the fans are and where the home run is?
And you won't have these issues.
And you won't have these issues. You won't have them that close.
Because then if it's a foul ball, I mean, you're really not, you know, like if it's a Steve Bartman situation. All right, you know, fan interference, sure, maybe it's an out, maybe, you know, it's a foul ball, but it's not taking points away from the board, guaranteed points away from the board. Yeah. Because if it wasn't fan interference, the player can get to it. It's just a foul ball. It's a strike. So you can have fans still sitting on the fence there, but for the home runs, hey, spread them out.
Yeah. Or have better, you know, I mean, listen, there's six umpires out there. I can't believe that Joe West was in that awful position. By the way,
look at the man.
He's been doing baseball games. He's been doing umpiring postseason games since 1986. He's done over 120 postseason games. Maybe that's a little too much for a human being to be doing.
Yeah, get Angel Hernandez out there. Come on.
I mean, really, unbelievable. How long, what are you going to keep him out there until he's 100? I mean, what's the deal with this?
And to your credit too, that we can't get better angles. We can put a camera in a pylon.
Yeah,
it sits on a goal that gets knocked over every single game.
And apparently, camera technology, from what I've been told, is so good that somebody could sit in the photographer's box with a phone and steal signals.
Yes.
From the Boston Red Sox. And we can't put a camera or have something.
Can't have something on the foul pole?
Down the foul pole to make sure that we can get proper angles in these kind of situations that blow series like this. All right, I want to get to more of this because I did think the Astros really hurt themselves. We'll get to also the Milwaukee LA series where Craig Counsell was like, you walked a guy? You're done. Oh, but that was the plan the whole time. We'll talk about that as well as we roll along on SB Nation Radio.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Well, one out of every four batteries will fail this winter, so get yours tested for free using the Superstart Battery Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts. If it needs to be replaced, O'Reilly is the Superstart battery for you. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. All right, so we're talking more about the Astros-Red Sox game last night, won by the Red Sox 8-6. They have a 3-1 series lead. I think the Astros are not going to win this. I don't think they're going to win three straight against the Red Sox. They are good on the road, and they have a good baseball team. Look, so this isn't – look, the Astros are not – it's not that they're not capable of winning three straight. They're excellent. But the Red Sox are just strong, really, really strong. Although Craig Kimbrel makes you sweat, doesn't he? If you're a Red Sox fan, this guy makes you sweat, especially in this series. The Astros had bases loaded in the ninth inning, down two runs, down 8-6. And Alex Bregman, he drilled a rope to left field. And Andrew Benintendi had a choice. He could have let that drop and fielded it and tried to hold the Astros to one run. Or he could have dove for it, tried to be a hero, make the catch, end the game. Or if he missed it, let it roll behind him. Here is Andrew Benintendi's moment in the sun for the Red Sox last night.
Kimbrel comes to the set. Outfielder step to the right to pitch. Swing and a line drive left field. Benintendi coming on, dives, and did he make the catch? He did! He got it!
The Red Sox win!
The Red Sox win!
I just went head over heels in my chair.
Joe just fell down.
Oh, wow, what a catch!
That is Joe Castiglione and Tim Neverett on the call on the Red Sox Radio Network. And Joe Castiglione fell out of his chair with a catch by Alex Bregman. What a catch last night. What a tough decision that was for that young kid. You don't think, so he's not processing it like a computer. He's just instinct. But if I dive and I miss this is going to the wall. If I dive and miss this, we're losing. And the series is tied. If I make the catch, game's over and I'm a hero. If I let it bounce and pick it up and I hold him to one run, well, then we're still in a little bit of trouble. But he was like, nah, I'm going for it. I'm going to dive right for it. And what a catch it was. What a catch it was. Red Sox now up 3-1. I don't think the Astros are cooked or done. But right now I'm not looking. I don't see it. The Astros hurt themselves last night. There's so many dumb things they did. Tony Kemp, hit the ball down the line in right field. Then he tried to turn it into a double. You don't need a double there. You just need a man on base. Chill out for a second. Mookie Betts has got a great arm. You know him. You're personal friends with him. You've been friends growing up together, playing ball together. And you know he can throw you out if he gets the ball. You took a chance, but don't take chances like that when you need runs late in a game. And Tyler White was up at the plate. Remember, he was up at the plate, seventh inning or so? Had a chance to bring in some runs and didn't even swing the bat. Swing the bat. So the Astros hurt themselves. But nevertheless, it's still Boston. I mean, they come at you in waves and waves and waves, and you never get them. You never control them. They will wait out your starting pitchers if they're good. They'll beat your mid relievers if you have to bring them in early. You know what? Maybe you get them 1, 2, 3, and then the bottom of the order puts up a crooked number. They just do this. This is what's made them so formidable all year, is that they come at you in just big, huge chunks. Whether it's Jackie Bradley Jr. hitting yet another home run, or Mookie Betts coming up with a couple of hits, or JD Martinez coming up with a couple of hits, or whatever it is, they'll come at you in waves. And that's problematic for any pitching staff. I don't care who you are. But the Astros had plenty of opportunities last night and blew it. But I want to get back to a point I made earlier at the start of the show. This game went too long. This game went way, way, way too long. 4.5 hours. You can love baseball and still think this was a way too long game. And this isn't like tennis, right? Where a tennis match may go 4.5 hours, but hey, you know what? When every set is going into tiebreakers and it's like 19-17, like they have at Wimbledon, that's just the way it goes, right? There are plenty of sports that don't have a time clock, and baseball doesn't and shouldn't have a time clock. But baseball has a problem here, and it doesn't know how to fix it. The genie's kind of out of the bottle, because they're not going back to shorter breaks in between pitches. They're going to extend these breaks in the postseason so that the television can get their revenue with the commercials that they throw. But they're also never going to restrict the amount of pitchers you can use. They're never going to dramatically change the strategic element of games, especially in the postseason. So they're stuck with this. And what is going to be the end result? Well, here's the deal. If you're a young kid and you live in Boston, and you may not be a Red Sox fan, well, you may not be a baseball fan, I should say. You may like the Red Sox because they're the local team, but you're not into baseball. But when you get to the postseason, you're into baseball. Major League Baseball has you, right? Same with Houston, same with LA, same with Milwaukee. When a team is winning, you get that audience. What they're going to suffer from is the kid in Nebraska that roots for the Cincinnati Reds for whatever reason. And does he watch postseason baseball when he becomes an adult? Is my son loves sports. He doesn't like baseball. He will not watch a baseball game. It is too long. I've taken him to games. It's not his style. He loves football. He'll watch a little basketball, but this is not his pace. It just doesn't fit with him. I took him to Yankee Stadium when I lived in New Jersey. I've taken him to Vanderbilt baseball games here in Nashville. He gets the game. He understands the game. But 4.5 hours, he ain't sitting through it. He's not sitting through it. The complaint used to be the games are on too late. The games are too long. This millennial crowd, you're going to lose them forever. They're not coming back. A 12, 13-year-old kid that will not watch a game like this is not going to watch it at 23 or 33. It just won't be part of their repertoire. They won't have the same emotional attachment that I do to baseball, because I grew up with it and liked it. We were talking about this with the 69 Mets yesterday, the the anniversary of them winning the World Series. You go through the box scores of the 69 Mets, and you can do this with any World Series like in the 70s. 2.5 hours, 9-inning game, 10-inning game, 2.5 hours. Yep, I understand. Television has changed the dynamic of it. These breaks are longer. You want to get more advertising dollars in, that's great. But 4.5 hours, baseball can't do this. They can't survive, and there's nothing they can do. There's nothing they can do. This game last night was in the 7th inning at midnight Eastern time. I can't imagine what the Major League Baseball was thinking in their offices in New York, realizing that the ending of this game was still probably an hour away to play 3 innings. And it was going to be done at 1 a.m. on a weeknight. You can't do this if you're Major League Baseball. And again, you can't put a clock on it. You can't restrict pitching changes. You're never going to reduce the amount of time between in postseason baseball, especially. You're not going to cut down advertising opportunities between innings. But this is what we're left with. But part of it is the joy of the game, too. I mean, part of what we're seeing in a 4.5 hour game is part of its appeal in postseason. Take everything and magnify it up, right? Take a pitching change and magnify it. Take a pitch, magnify it. Make every detail important. Because when you do that, you naturally are making the game much longer than it probably needs to be. But baseball is in trouble because that game last night went way, way, way too long. SB Nation Radio.
Now, back to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Staying with the baseball theme this morning as we roll along with the AL and NLCSs. Dodgers up 3-2, 1 win away to go back to the World Series. You were nervous.
No, I wasn't.
Yes, you were. You weren't nervous?
Okay, I was nervous when Kershaw was having that little struggle early in the game.
Okay.
And then he found his groove, and then after that I wasn't nervous anymore.
How about Kershaw going 7 innings? What a rare treat that was in these playoffs. Yeah,
throw that postseason mantra that he can't pitch in the postseason away.
I know. He's been doing great.
He was incredible.
He certainly did better than Wade Miley, who walked his first batter, and then Craig Counsell said, "That's enough. You're going to pitch tomorrow."
Does that even count towards his record at all?
The walk would.
I mean, that was the most bizarre.
Now, by the way, now they walk Cody Bellinger. Never mind. Dead topic.
Maybe that's what it was. Counsell was like, you know what? This is what I should have done yesterday. Let's just get it out of the way now.
Craig Counsell's overthinking this. Come on. I'm going to start Wade Miley for one, and then I'm going to get Dave Roberts to put in his certain lineup. Then I'm going to take Wade Miley out of the game after one batter. Stop overthinking this. Play baseball.
Yeah, that did not make any sense to me. I know these managers are trying to play chess, and right. it's only what been maybe like the last few years, maybe the last 5 years, where the managers are starting to play chess a little bit more. Well, because back in the day, it just felt like, you know, it's like, hey, I've got my starters, I got my relievers, I got my closer. And that's how I'm going to roll. And everyone did the same thing. Now this was the first time ever. It was like, oh, you know, the A's don't have a starter. They have an opener.
And yeah, they're out getters. This is what I read. That's what he's like. I'm out getters. Now your pitchers, start your pitchers.
Yeah. And then
get them a groove.
The whole thing with Wade Miley is like, got him all warmed up, got him, you know, he got dressed for the big ball, and then, you know, he got taken out of the game before Cinderella did.
Yeah, and then, so what it sounds like to me, because I guess Dave Roberts anticipated that Counsell would do something like this, is it reminds me of that scene in Princess Bride where they're having that argument over the Iocane powder.
Yes.
And he's like, and I knew that you knew that I knew that you knew that I would, and then he's at the end, he goes, what's over there? And he switches it over. And meanwhile, the whole time he had been immune to Iocane powder, so he put him in both glasses. It's like Craig Counsell's like, well, I'm going to do this. And then Dave Roberts is like, well, then I'm going to do this because I think I know you're going to do that. And then Counsell's like, well, I think you know that I'm going to do that, so I'm going to also do this. And Roberts goes, I anticipate that you'll be doing that, so I'm going to do it. It's just like, don't overthink this. Stop. It's so crazy. Just it's unnecessary. If you don't have a starter, fine. You want to do it this way, fine. But I'm glad Kershaw went seven innings like a traditional pitcher is supposed to do.
It's refreshing.
It's refreshing to see a pitch. Like, here's the deal. Like, Justin Verlander, they were making this point last night late in the broadcast. They were like, and Justin Verlander will get the start tomorrow night to try to save the Astros season. Great, that's a great line. Here's the problem. Verlander might get pulled in four innings, and we might be in one of those bullpen battles, and the game might not be decided until the ninth inning anyway. I'm hoping Verlander, if you're an Astros fan, goes seven solid, and the Astros have a 4-0 lead at that point, or 6-1 lead at that point, which is what you're looking for in a traditional baseball game. But it feels like these guys last three innings, four innings, they get pulled, and then it becomes a bullpen battle, and that's what we do. That's the narrative, and that's the story of the game. And that's Milwaukee's story, because that's what Milwaukee does. That's their strategy. But it's not pleasant to watch. And good for the Dodger fans last night, or I mean yesterday afternoon, I should say, for booing when Council went out to get Miley after one batter. Good. Good. I mean, they don't care, but at least let your voice know that this is just baloney. Right? This is just too tactical. But that's what Milwaukee's doing. They don't even have they're throwing Miley out in game six Friday night. He becomes, I think they had to look it up to see if anybody had ever started back-to-back games in the postseason. I don't think anybody has. I'm sure Mordecai Three Finger Brown might have done so in like the 1892 World Series. Maybe Cy Young did it. I don't know. Babe Ruth when he was younger? I have no idea. But Wade Miley is going to add that in 2018. Pretty much the last statistic we should ever see in 2018 is a pitcher starting back-to-back games in the postseason because of the stupidity of one batter to set a lineup. I don't know. Like, I know things about baseball, but I don't know why baseball does certain things. Like, okay, you give out a lineup card. Why? Why do you have to send your lineup in if this is what we're going to do? Because if you're Dave Roberts, why don't you just say, you know what? I'm not putting my lineup out there. I'm going to change it on the fly after I know what your pitcher is going to do before I go through it the first time. No, he has to say to the umpire, here is my nine batters and the positions that they're going to play coming to the plate. Here's what it is. And Milwaukee can go, we'll send a pitcher out there and then take him out. So you throw your righties on, you fill your lineup with righties or lefties, depending on what I do. Then I change pitchers. Then you're screwed for a while until you change it. It's ridiculous.
So here we go. I just broke it down for the ALCS and NLCS.
Okay, go ahead.
We've had nine games, right? Am I doing my math? Yeah, nine games.
Right.
So technically there should have been 18 starting pitchers.
Yep.
I mean, roughly. Even though Milwaukee doesn't have starting pitchers, they have openers or out-getters.
Right.
We've only had five pitchers go six innings or more.
That's it.
And in two of those games, with Gerrit Cole, he went six innings and took the loss. And Buehler for the Dodgers went seven innings and took the loss.
Man, it's crazy.
But that's it. Five pitchers who've pitched six innings or more. Everyone else has five innings or less.
I posted on Facebook a picture of, again, going back to yesterday's show when we talked about the 69 Mets. I posted a picture of the 69 Mets. I tagged a couple members of my family that were Mets fans. My cousin, who wasn't alive in the 69 Mets, but is a really smart baseball, he really prides himself on his knowledge of baseball history and his memorization of baseball situations. And he pointed out on Facebook that Nolan Ryan gave up the tying run in the ninth inning of the World Series games against Baltimore, and then they sent him out to pitch in the 10th. And you just do not see that today. They just don't see it today. There's just this short trust of guys you had 162 games with. But when it comes to the postseason, it's like, as soon as you throw three balls outside the plate, they're already warming up guys in the bullpen to yank you out after a third of an inning.
Yeah, take last night, for example. Matt Barnes was dealing.
Dealing.
And then you take him out and you're just like, oh, I got to put my closer in. I have to put my closer in.
Yeah, why?
And Kimbrough almost blew the game. Like, why take Matt Barnes out? He was just mowing Astros down like it was his business, which it is his business. And then you do it because that's the game dictates now is got to put my closer in.
Exactly. You don't have to do this. You could do it. You could just go with odd hand. By the way, I haven't seen a lot of Astros games during the regular season, but boy, oh boy, Josh James was impressive at times. I know he struggled to get two outs and whatnot, but boy, he looked good pitching that ball at times. He threw 102 miles an hour, and then he came up with a changeup in the 90s. Good for him. I didn't see much of him during the regular season.
Yeah, I really didn't pay much attention to him either.
He went 3 2/3 and gave up three runs off four hits, but he had five strikeouts. So I know he struggled late and gave up the home run. I think he gave up the home run. But nevertheless, these series are getting over. I mean, these managers are just overthinking. It's too bad because I didn't like what, and I'm not a get off my lawn type of guy when it comes to this. I don't like what Craig Counsell did with Wade Miley. I don't need the sort of show. And I just think that this strategy backfires a bit because of the amount of pitchers that you're going to have to use. But again, even if a guy gets shelled, you're just bringing in fresh arms constantly, but eventually you're just going to run out of them. You're going to run out of good quality pitchers. Obviously they got far with this, but nevertheless, I was glad Kershaw went 7. So they go to Miller Park on Friday. The Dodgers are a win away from repeating as National League champions. And they could be facing the Red Sox. They need one win in the next three games. Can you imagine if Benintendi missed that ball?
One thing we would be talking about is Altuve's home run.
We wouldn't be talking about Altuve's home run, but we'd also be talking about a tied series going, it would have been so rich. He misses that ball. That gets to the wall. I don't know if three runs score. That's a lot to ask the guy on first to run it in. Maybe he does. But at least the game would have been tied. And Bregman laced that pitch. When he hit that, the second he hit that, I thought, oh boy, we're tied now. No, Benintendi on the run. Dives and makes a catch. Mookie Betts throwing Kemp out from the corner. By the way, Josh Reddick had a great catch too. This game could have been 12-6 if Reddick doesn't make a play on that ball. Red Sox could have scored runs and then kept rallying the whole time. That's the danger of this series, though. This is what Boston does, man. They will pound you and pound you and pound you until you can't take it anymore. And the Astros are hanging with them, just not enough. There's just not enough outs. There's not enough innings. And they just can't get a rhythm enough to this is the second night in a row they've had bases loaded in the ninth inning to try to get something going, and they haven't been able to get anything going.
And that's what, you know, that's where you kind of put the needle towards the Red Sox.
Yeah.
In this, you know, I mean, I think the Astros, I think they have a good chance of winning tonight with Verlander on the mound. But there's no way they're going to be able to take three games from the Red Sox just because the Astros have been inconsistent at the plate.
Have been inconsistent. And,
you know, aside from, what was that, game one, where late in the innings, the Astros, you know, did what they've been doing all season long, which was just pile on runs, you know, 7-8 innings. In the seventh inning or the eighth inning.
And the other thing too is that you're if you're the Astros, there doesn't seem to be a feeling that you have pitchers that can contain, not shut down, but just contain this Boston lineup a little bit when they get going. Like they just, whether it's mid-relief or late or even starting pitching, there doesn't seem to be an ability to just contain it until you start getting hot. If the Astros keep playing catch-up or they take a lead and it's just by one and then Boston regains the lead, that's hard to do. They have to win games where they put six on the board early and then hold on to that lead. Not get into this, it's 2-1, now it's 2-2, now we're down 3-2, now we go up 4-2, now they're up 5-2, you know, whatever it is. You've got to play in a game where you can put some numbers on the board and get your pitchers comfortable without feeling like they're going to make a mistake, because in a tight game, you're going to make a mistake and the Red Sox will make you pay for it. They will make you pay for it in a close game. Put 6 on the board, go up 6-1, Well, now you can get crafty with your pitchers, because if they hit one out of the park, it's not going to kill you. All right, 800-777-2907. Hit us up on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, or at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's on SB Nation AM.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Well, the crack research development of this show, we found out the answer to the last pitcher to pitch back-to-back games in the postseason. Start, I should say. Not pitch, because that happens all the time.
Yes.
Start in the postseason. Wade Miley is going to do that in Game 6 on Friday night. So who is it? Who is the lucky winner of the last pitcher to do that?
You probably don't know the guy. I'm just going to have – I want you to guess what year do you think this took place?
1921.
Ah, that's a good guess.
All right. That's what
this, this happened for Game 5 and Game 6 in the 1930 World Series.
Oh, okay. So it's not that far off.
No. Right. And it was the great George Earnshaw of the Philadelphia Athletics.
Now, who are they playing? Does it say who their opponent was?
They were playing against, I believe, the St. Louis Cardinals.
Okay, so here's what my thinking is. That he pitched Game 5. What was it, Game 5 and 6?
Game 5 and Game 6.
He pitched Game 5, and then they got on the old steam engine all the way to St. Louis and draw all the day. It took 3 days to get to St. Louis for the conclusion of the World Series. And so he had plenty of rest to go off in Game number 6. And that's pretty much what happened. That's what I'm thinking. Not get on a chartered flight and me in St. Louis in 2 hours. But back then they didn't need 4 days rest to pitch again. Pitcher would be like, okay, Skipper, I'd be more than happy to go back out there and throw the baseball if you need me. I can go another 7 innings, Skipper.
1930. He went 7 innings in Game 5.
I got the old knuckler going, Skip. It'll be no problem.
And you're exactly right. He went 7 innings in Game 5 at Sportsman Park in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't end up getting the win, though, because the game was tied.
Oh, okay.
And Lefty Grove came in.
Oh, Lefty Grove.
Came in the 8th inning and took care of business, and Philadelphia scored 2 runs at the top of the 9th. Then in Game 6, 2 days later.
Yeah, because of the train ride.
Yep, he went...
Maybe they were going by wagon.
It doesn't show how many innings he went that game.
No. Oh, was he trying to fool the opposing team by pitching him an inning like Wade Miley?
No, I think he went complete.
Went complete. Well done. Well done. And the 1930 World
Series.
Yeah,
he went complete game. 7 innings one day, 2 days later, complete.
SB Nation Radio.